All right, let's turn to 1 Thessalonians 5 this morning. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. That's where we were last week. We started out there and talked about being children of the light. Walking in the light. All right, we're going to move on down through this chapter this week to verse number 12. We're going to start in verse number 12. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you, and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. All right. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you. Thank you for your word, and thank you for what you've showed me here in these verses. Help me this morning, Lord, I pray. Help me get my thoughts collected and to be able to say what I need to say about this, Lord, that you'd want me to say. Lord, in Jesus' name, amen. How many times has somebody asked you, hey, do you know so-and-so? I mean, that's a question that gets asked a lot of times. Even here in church, when we're doing prayer requests and stuff. Well, somebody will say, do you know so-and-so? Or do you know Mrs. So-and-so? And, you know, the thing that's addressed a lot is, in what way do we know other people? In this verse, what he said there in verse number 12, he said, I beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you. To know them. Well, I mean, he's talking about the people they go to church with there. Well, of course they know them. How would you not know the people you go to church with unless you go to a big mega church or something? Speaking of that, I seen that James River Church. You were showing us the thing over there. It's over there south of Springfield. It is humongous on 65 right there. It is unbelievably huge. But anyway, we seen it and she seen it. It just had a big giant sign in the front that said Jesus. And as we're driving by or whatever, I said, what kind of church is that? And Kim turned around and she goes, that's that James River Church. Oh, okay. All right. There's probably people that go to that church that don't know who their fellow laborers are, if that's going on there at all. But, I mean, I don't think we have that problem here in our church, do we? We know each other. Or do we? Why would he say something so obvious, you know them? That are them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you. Well, obviously it was something that even Paul recognizes, man, you know, there's all kinds of different things about knowing somebody. There's different ways to know people. So we're going to talk about a few of them this morning. There's different kinds of know. The awareness aspect of it, I mean, you know me and I know you. I know who Donald Trump is. I know him. Do you know who Donald Trump is? Yeah, I know him. Well, I don't know him. I know of him. I'm aware that he is the president. I know who he is. But I don't know him in that way. I mean, really, I don't know him. Neither do you. There's some people think they really do, but I don't think nobody really does. And then there's, you're familiar with, okay? Do you know someone? Oh yeah, that's old Mr. Jack's son, or I'm familiar with who that is. I mean, you know, we all got people in our life that's that way. We know who certain people are based on maybe a mutual acquaintance or whatever. And then as far as being acquainted with somebody, that's another way to know someone. I mean, every one of these is just a little bit more of a progression into a deeper, you know, state of knowing someone. All of us here, most of us, with each other, everyone fits in these categories somewhere. I mean, we all know who each other are, but I know some of you a whole lot more intimately than others. There's some of you, I know things about you, and you know things about me that some of the other people in here don't. And, you know, everybody that you know and everybody you're around, even in a family, especially in a church, there's always people in your church and in your family that you dwell with according to knowledge that way, where you know them to a certain depth and they know you to a certain depth. But I think what Paul was trying to get at here is that, look, casual acquaintances don't make good churches. And, you know, neither do they make good families. One of the biggest problems that you see in families is miscommunication. Because it literally takes someone saying, "I didn't say that. I don't feel that way," for someone to be like, "Okay, they said they don't feel that way. Okay, mark it down. Seth said he don't feel that way. Okay, now we know that's took care of." When really, if they knew me, if I knew you, I'd understand that's not how they are at all. That's not how he feels at all. I know him. Why? Well, why do you say that? Because I know him. Because I know her. She wouldn't. If she did say that, that's not what she meant. Why you say? Well, because I know her. And really, when we examine ourselves, because this is where this has got to begin with ourselves. I mean, it's where all of this problem solving starts, is it has to begin with me. And it's your duty, it's my duty, to try and get to know the people in your life that you love and that love you in a deeper way than just once a week at church or your family once every once in a while when you bump into them or got to go over to dad's to borrow a ladder or, you know, something like that. It's your responsibility to know each other in a more intimate way. And there's just, it's really, if we don't do that, then you can only go so far in any of this, with church, with family, in a relationship between a man and his wife, you and your kids, all that. It all is that, it affects everything. I gave you those three other versions of know, if you want to call them that, the two different kinds of being, you know, how to know someone, being aware of them, being familiar with them, being acquainted with them. But there's another definition in the dictionary about knowing someone, to know. One of the definitions in the dictionary is this: to experience, to go through, to live through, to undergo, to taste. Now, that's, you know, we can relate that a whole lot more to like, hey, do you know what a hamburger tastes like? Yeah, I've tasted it. I've lived through that. I've experienced that. But apply that to a relationship. You know, I know who the guy is that owns the store down here. I know Steve. I've known him for years. But I don't know him like in a way where we're real close. You know, there's different terminology that the world uses and we use it too. I mean, you know, well, I know him, but we're not close. Well, I know him, but I boys and girls, they do that, you know, do you like her? Well, yeah, I like her, but I don't like her, you know what I'm saying. I mean, I like him, but I don't like him that way, you know. Well, that's implicative of how you know them. Or don't know them. I mean, I know Steve, but we're not close. Because I've never had to go through anything with him. Going through things, and it's not just going through hard times that makes people get to know each other better. It's going through good times, too. We went on our little trip this weekend. We really had a good time. We enjoy it. Why? We get to know each other better. We really do. And it's not because we go out there and suffer for 2 days. No, we have a real good time. And we get to know them in a better way. We get closer. It's more of an intimate relationship because we have confidence with each other, because we know each other a little bit better. That's what Paul was trying to tell them here. Listen, I beseech you. I'm begging you. Get to know each other in a deeper way. You know, if you will do that, you'll trust each other. And I'm going to get ahead of myself. Hold on, just try to stick with my notes here because I don't want to get off track. Yeah, this kind of no, the experiencing a relationship with someone comes at a lot higher cost. And it demands of the people participating in that, it demands some things of them that the other kinds of no, the no, don't. I mean, I can know Steve, I can know different people in the community, and it don't cost me anything to know who they are because there's not a relationship there. Now, that's, you know, I don't have a relationship with them, but to know them don't cost you anything. But to know someone where you care about them, that now you're starting to get into a whole nother realm. Here's some of the things that it demands. It demands honesty and transparency. You know, what is something that you've heard somebody say before about, you know, somebody warning somebody else about a certain person? You better watch them. Well, why? Because you can't trust them. You better watch what you say around so-and-so because, I mean, they seem nice and all, I know, but you better not, you can't trust them. Why? Because they're not honest. They put one foot forward that you see, and it's not who they really are. You know, there's all kinds of synonyms for it, two-facedness, hypocrisy, all that kind of stuff that we know of. But I'm saying this, and every single person in here, there's a face of somebody or somebodies that's in your mind right now that you're thinking about, because all of us are affected by people like this. And if we're not careful, we'll be that person, not even realize that's what we're doing. That's why he's telling them, you know, I'm beseeching you. You know, he didn't say us and do the ecumenical thing of all inclusiveness so it don't step on specific people's toes. He said, I beseech you, you guys, know each other. Be honest. Be transparent. When someone, I don't know, what's another terminology that they have for it when you say, I don't know what it is about that guy. It's just something that's not, he's just shady. Everybody knows what that implies, right? Well, there's more than meets the eye. He's not being very forthcoming about what he really, truly is or what his intentions are. He's shady. Funny how that has a connotation to darkness, right? Even the world's own terminology. He's shady. Lives in the shadows. He's hiding stuff. You can't know somebody and them know you if you're not transparent. Now, I understand that there are things that tact requires us to keep under your vest. You know, I mean, there's things you don't reveal to. I'd like to stand up and tell everybody. No, there's things that they need to be kept under wraps, per se. But as far as knowing each other, we hide so much stuff from each other. And then we wonder why we don't have a good relationship with each other. And we've never truly been honest about who we really are. And we was talking about that whole thing with China and what they're doing with their social media. And we was talking about it on the way to Branson this weekend about how that, you know, what they've done, you know, the whole world is just like aghast at the fact that they're using social media to physically sort people out and how appalling that idea is when we've done the exact same thing with Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, and we've sorted our own selves out and we treat each other accordingly based on that. Why? Because everybody just takes it for granted that what you are on social media is who you really are. You ever met somebody and they're so sweet and they just love Jesus and all they want to do is quote Bible verses and, oh, praise the Lord, and they're wearing a t-shirt that says something about that. And you look on their Facebook and today it's all about Jesus and tomorrow it's all about some horrible profanity or some risque something or another. And you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe she or he would put that on there. But the more you get to know them, the more you really realize that that's really kind of who they are. So see, it's not too far off base. People feel like they can be themselves when they're not having to be accountable to each other. That's why social media is such a rabbit hole. It's a dangerous place to be because, you know, you confuse reality in the real world. you confuse that with this world, this virtual world that you've made up. People become more invested in their virtual persona, their avatar, they call it, or whatever, than it's make-believe. It's fake. But the truth is that people become so invested in it because of the no accountability issue that the real what they really are on their inside is what you see pouring out in their Facebook. You get around. I see it all the time, especially, and it's generational. I mean, I understand that, and I'm not bashing on young people or nothing like that. It's just systematically, every generation that comes along, this is more a part of their life than it was of mine. And so I see them, they come to my shop, and I'll be messaging them on my messenger or something about a sign or a carving or whatever our deal is. And, oh, they're just talk your leg off and just won't stop blowing up your phone. And so articulate and conversation and everything and all this stuff. And they show up to pick up their stuff, and they can't carry on a conversation with you. Or half the time, they won't even look up off the ground. I've had them literally stand there and stare at the ground, and I'd have to just, like, pump them verbally to try to get them to talk to me. And this person had been blowing up my phone last night because they were so excited to come and meet me and see the shop, and today they're here and it's like a totally different person. Well, that's all social media and all that kind of how that affects our lives. But we do that even with each other. Sitting here in this church, no social media, no phones, no nothing, and yet we do that. We do it in our own homes with each other, with our wife, with our kids, you know. It's a habit you get into based on how how much time does everybody spend on their social media? All their time, basically. Everybody's on there all the time. And it becomes the habit of everybody's life. So then you just start living in the real world like you do in the virtual world. And man, that's why we're in the mess we're in. Nobody is who they say they are. It's hard as all get out to try to get somebody to just be honest with each other about who they are or about what their intentions are. And then you wonder why you have so much of a hard time trying to make a lost man or a lost woman understand that until you're honest before God about what you really are and what you've really done with God's law, then you can't proceed with salvation. Why do we think it's so hard to make them understand that when nobody, not even us, are real most of the time in our life? Even with each other, we don't know each other. That's really that simple. It's not a super complicated, you know, issue as far as understanding it. It's just, it all starts with honesty and transparency. You know, I've been in services, and you know what I'm talking about before, where, you know, preacher would say, anybody got a testimony or word they'd like to say? Anything? And usually it was at the end of a pretty serious meeting or something, a sermon or something like that. And things would be quiet. It'd be like it'd take a while for everybody for it to kind of break loose a little bit. Finally, somebody'd stand up and start crying and say, listen, I just need to tell you, I'm sorry. You said something to me a couple months ago, and I just took it the wrong way, and I've just been harboring some bitterness against you for that. And I'm confessing it, and I want to apologize. Will you forgive me? Well, of course I'll forgive you. They'd sit down. Well, here a little bit, somebody else would stand up over here and say, I got something I'd like to say too. And, you know, you confess in some things, and it's honesty, transparency. And after that, that evil spirit hovering around the church kind of went away for a while because there was some honesty and transparency. Another thing that this does, it makes you vulnerable. You know, that's the whole thing about love and all of that. It all ties into it, but getting to know someone. You know, there's people who keep everybody at arm's length all the time. Just keep them right here all the time. I'll let you get close, but only so close. Well, why? Well, because I've been burned before, and I'm not letting nobody in that close ever again. Ain't nobody doing that to me again. Well, enjoy being alone. Because eventually that's where you'll wind up. Because until you make yourself a little bit vulnerable, see, that's part of the cost of getting to know somebody. You have to make yourself, you got to put yourself out there at the mercy of the goodness of someone else. You got to be vulnerable. That's not a good place. I don't like being vulnerable. I've spent a lot of time orchestrating my life in such a way so that I'm not vulnerable. You know, even like, you know, I was talking to the sheriff over at Wayne County a couple of days ago. We come by and got something from him. We sent her talking, and I was just, you know, it ain't very often you get to have the sheriff at your house and just talk to him. So I asked him some questions about concealed carrying and different things like that, just some things I'd been thinking about. And I said, you know, talked about how I'd be so scared to actually have to, with, you know, to pull my gun and do something with it in a situation. Because I said, it don't matter what side I'd be on, I'd be, you know, I'd be in trouble. And he kind of, you know, he kind of looked at the ground and he said, well, yeah, you're right. And he didn't want to say it, but I went ahead and said it for him. I said, well, the thing most people need to do is just be a little more proactive about not putting themselves in a situation where they have to pull their gun. He said, that's exactly right. Don't go to the city. Don't go out at night wandering around and stuff. He said, if you're not in the place where the bad guy's going to try to rob you, then you don't have to shoot him. And it's that simple. You don't make yourself vulnerable. But in the matter of what we're talking about here, there has to be a certain element of vulnerability, or else there's no trust. That's just how it works. You know, you have to put yourself out there a little bit. And you'll see, especially if everybody's heart's in the right place, people recognize you being vulnerable. And, you know, if everybody's wanting to do what's right, people won't take advantage of that. I mean, if you go through this and you have the honesty and the transparency part, you've already put some confidence in the people around you, and you've made yourself vulnerable. But if you're being vulnerable with someone who's honest with you, then there's a little bit of trust involved, see? So you can trust them to be vulnerable around them. We don't trust each other because we don't know each other. And let me tell you something. You get to knowing some people and you realize, better watch. I don't want to make myself vulnerable to that person. That doesn't mean you can't still love them and be their friend. It don't mean that you shun them. It don't mean that you know, I used to say this, and I still feel this way. I'd see somebody with a little 2-year-old that was just tearing the house down or, you know, screaming in the floor or whatever, and they're just like, you know, I can't whoop them in the store. I can't do this. I'd say, you know, you're 35 years old. He's 2. You're smarter than him. Just outfox him. It's not that hard. They're 2 years old. Be the adult. Be smarter than them. You don't have to always resort to the club. I mean, come on. Just outfox them. Well, here's the thing. You can do the same thing with somebody you can't trust. You know, there's a thing that the Lord gives you when you're right with Him. It's called wisdom. It comes from His Word. And there's all kinds of stuff in here about how to deal with somebody you can't trust. And, you know, you can still show them God's love without making yourself real vulnerable. As you get to know each other, you'll find out who's real and who ain't. But let me tell you something. When everybody, and I've seen it once again in that setting in church where everybody's confessing and everybody's apologizing, trying to make some things right. There's people there that are real hard heads about it. And after that spirit goes away and you see more of a unity start to form in the church there in that meeting, I've seen those people stand up and say, I'm sorry. You know, I'd have never thought they would, but because everybody else was doing it, it wasn't peer pressure. It was because it was the right thing. Why does peer pressure always got to make people do wrong? You know, it can work the other way too. You know, your influence, I mean, ain't that what we're supposed to be doing? Is salt? We was over in that knife store yesterday, and you know, I told Dad, we went in there, and it's just a little old knife store down there at the landing. And little old man and woman in there running the place. And we was looking around at all the knives and everything, and got back here in the corner, and there was a whole rack of Chick Tracks there. And there was a stack of Bibles, said KJV Bibles, free, take one. And it was just them being salt. You know, they didn't have a big banner out in the front and playing praise and worship music out in front of their knife store. No. No, it was just some salt over in the corner. And see, it didn't cost them a dime to do that other than just doing it. And that's what your influence, making yourself vulnerable, being honest and transparent with each other, it'll make other people that might not do it on their own, it'll influence them to do the right thing. It'll draw the goodness of God. Ain't what draws men to repentance? And how's a lost person going to see that if not through us being good to each other, knowing each other? Another thing it takes is patience and time. It takes a lot of patience with some people. Some people, it's so easy to be honest with them and transparent and vulnerable, maybe a little bit. Some people, it's hard. Don't know if those people I was talking about, that you get to know them a little bit and you're like, don't want to be too transparent with you for fear of what you'll do with it. Well, I heard a story one time about an old Quaker back in the early, I guess, 1700, somewhere in there. It was a story, and it was a cold winter night. He heard a knock on his door. He opened the door, and there was a traveler there. And he said, come in out of the cold. So he brought him in, and he's over by the fire warming himself. And right away, this stranger started being very profane. He just had a filthy mouth, cursing the cold, cursing the wind. And, you know, the Quaker was so appalled by the sudden, you know, burst of profanity from this man. He said, do you not know where you're at? Don't you know what I am? He said, just get out of my house. You're not going to be here and talk like that. Get out. Go on your way. And he, well, fine. So he picked his stuff up and out the door he went. And as the Quaker went to shut the door, he said the Lord touched his heart and said, that man's been profane all his life. And I've put up with him all his life. And you couldn't put up with him for one evening and show him a little bit of my kindness? Quaker opened the door and said, come back in here. Come back in. And that's what it takes. Some patience. And sometimes it takes a lot of time. Sometimes people don't respond to your kindness right away. Matter of fact, they might respond in a totally adverse way that makes you think, what in the world? What's wrong with this person? Well, we got to be patient. And then it takes love. That's kind of a no-brainer. It's kind of obvious. But, you know, we memorized 1 Corinthians 13 a couple years ago here in church. And, you know, we've all read it 100 times. But read through that real slow and think about somebody that you just cannot stand, that has done you wrong, that's lied about you, that's took advantage of your vulnerability, that's took advantage of your honesty and transparency with them, and they've took and run to your enemies with it. And read that chapter real slow and think about that person. And that's what it's going to take. That kind of response to that is what it's going to take to get to know those people and for them to get to know you and for them to get to know God. That's the reason why, I don't know, when we were over there living in Virginia, in our church there was a young man come into service one night, and I seen him sitting up there with his dad. And I just was like, I didn't know him at all. I didn't know who he was. But I watched him, and he was pretty quiet, and, you know, he kind of stayed to himself. And, you know, probably a month or so went by of us going to church, and I'd see him there, but I didn't talk to him. Just kind of just seeing, you know, just watching him. He didn't talk to many other people. He was pretty backward. And anyway, long story short, somehow there was a conversation got started between the two of us. And turns out he was a pretty nice boy. And I talked to him a little bit more. And next thing you know, I said, well, hey, why don't you come over and eat supper with us one night this week? He was home from college at the time, fixing to go back to school. I said, come over and eat dinner with us. Okay. So he showed up and he ate dinner with us. And then from that point on, for the next 2 years while he was in college, when he come home, mostly he was at our house. Turned out to be a real good friend. Still is a real good friend. Brandon. And, you know, I sang at his wedding. He's come out here to Missouri to visit us with his family. I don't know. It's just one of those deals where for my first glance at him, I thought, that boy, you know, he won't even talk to nobody. Wonder what's his problem. But once I got to know him a little bit, found out that, hey, there was something there worth cultivating. And he turned out to be a really good friend. And most people, the reason why that they don't cultivate these relationships with each other, even in our church or in our families or anything, is because they won't just get to know somebody. They make a judgment call based upon what you speculate they are, on something superficial and really shallow. I looked at him and he wasn't talking to nobody, and I thought, I guess you think you're better than everybody else. Won't talk to nobody. You probably don't even want to be at church right now. And I couldn't have been further from the truth. Truth be told, he was trying to stay with his dad, because there was a lot of young people in that church his age that hadn't went to Bible school. They'd went to some secular school and they spent their weekends drinking. So when he was home, he didn't want to hang out with them no more. So he stayed with his dad. And I looked at that and speculated wrong, because I didn't know him. A lot of people do the Lord the same way. You know that? Lost people distrust the Lord. They don't believe anything about him. They think evil of him because they don't know him. And the only way they're going to know him is if we show him who he is, by how we treat each other, how we know each other, and how we treat the lost. But we can't even treat each other right, let alone lost people, because we don't know them. We don't know each other. It takes some effort. And it takes these things I've listed here: honesty and transparency, vulnerability, patience, and love. That is the universal language. We've always said it. Kindness is a universal language. It doesn't matter where you go if you can't talk their language or anything. If you're kind, they recognize it. It doesn't matter where you go. I would venture to say that even that island where that guy got killed a few weeks ago, if it was done the right way, or if they could have managed to make it happen, maybe there might be a spark of humanity left in those people enough to respond to some kindness. Jim Elliot was a missionary back in the 50s or 60s, somewhere in there. And he went to New Guinea to this lost tribe down there, him and four other guys, I think. And long story short, they were trying to reach these people for Christ. White men had never been back here. Just some oil tycoons had been back in there trying to steal land from them or whatever. They were vicious. And they murdered them. Those Indians killed Jim Elliot and his fellow missionaries. Speared them to death. But in the long run, his wife, Jim Elliot's wife, Elizabeth Elliot, she kept going back and trying to find a way to reach those people, and she did. They reached those people with kindness. They murdered her husband, and she still showed them the kindness that God can only help somebody do. And it reached them. And they reached them for Christ. A bunch of them got saved. But it took that kind of getting to know these people. It cost her something dearly. It cost her a whole lot more to be able to go there and show them God's love than just leaving her home. No, it cost her her life, really. I mean, everything that she had planned for had to get undone in order to still do that. Here's another concept to think about. You know, some different ways, like, for example, in the Bible, Genesis chapter 4, I'm just going to flip back here real quick and read it. You know, the world has corrupted this what I'm about to read, but try to keep your mind on what we're talking about here and understand what this means. And Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, "I've gotten a man from the Lord." Now everybody takes that to be implicative of why she wound up having Cain. But you got to think about it. Adam and Eve had been through a lot before Cain ever come along. Did he know who Eve was when they were in the garden? Sure he did. But it took some time, and it took some trials, it took some suffering to know her. I mean, think about what happened between in the garden and when Cain was born. I mean, the fruit on the tree, the serpent, the lambs that were slain for their skins, God coming and meeting with them in the garden. Hey, Adam, where art thou? Well, Eve and this, and out of the garden you go. Flaming swords, angels standing there with flaming swords. You know, he got to know her a whole lot better during that time. There was a lot of knowing her that happened between when God woke him up and said, look what I made you, and when she had Cain. And it come from suffering, and it come from some hard things. Look down in verse 24. I think it's right. Is it right? No, 25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son and called his name Seth. For God said, she hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. Between Cain being born and Seth being born, think about how much more had happened. Think about how much, I mean, if they thought they'd been through the ringer by the time Cain was born and he knew his wife, think about how more differently he knew Eve in a different depth of knowledge by the time Seth come along. What had happened? Well, Cain killed Abel. And God run their only remaining son off and put a mark on him, and he was condemned. I mean, that's a whole nother level of hard things to go through. And he got to know her, a whole nother side of her. You know, I'm just saying, their relationship didn't start bearing fruit as far as their union, their family, till he got to know her some. And, you know, it's funny because we've got four kids, and I remember where I was in my life, mentally and everything, when Anna was born. And then I remember where I was when Maddie was born. We joke about it, or she does. It's not funny. It's kind of shameful. When Anna was being born, you know, she can't have no food because she's in labor and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there and watching football or something on the TV. And, hey, it's about 11 o'clock. I'm starving. What? She said, go get you something to eat. And I'm like, are you sure? Now, I was 21 years old, so I was pretty dumb. And she said, yeah, go get you something to eat. Now, if I'd had any sense at all, I'd have been like, you know what, babe? I ain't doing it. I'm right here with you. I'll eat when you can. Wrong. I went across the street to Taco Bell and got a giant pile of chalupas or something and come back over and watched football and ate chalupas while she laid there in labor. What a jerk. That was a horrible thing to do. Why'd I do that? Well, I was stupid, for one. But I didn't know her. You know the truth? I didn't know her. Now, when Maddie was born, you know, she didn't even know how scared I was. Because we were older. We'd been through a bunch of stuff. And I was worried about her. You know, I was worried about her and the baby, about something happening. You know, she always had a really easy time having kids. Now, I'm thankful to the Lord for it. But there's always that chance that something could go sideways. And I was worried. Like when Maddie finally was born and everything was okay, and it was just like the breath of relief, the sigh of relief I let go of when that happened was way different than when Anna was born. Why? Because I knew her better. You know? And there's been a whole nother world of things we've been through since Maddie was born. I know her in a completely different way now than I did even then. So see, this thing of knowing someone is a progressive thing. It has levels, it has stages, and it takes time. You know, there was a time when me and Dad, we didn't get along real good. You know, there was issues that I didn't try to bring up too much because they were hot button topics, as they call them now. Triggers. Why? Because I didn't know him. I was more interested in knowing me. Or matter of fact, I was more interested in him knowing who I was. Won't you get to know me? How foolish. As time has went by, I've got to know him better. And a lot more things make sense. We have a different relationship now than we ever have. Why? Because I know him better. It's that way with the Lord too. You know, you get saved and man, you're just firing on 20 cylinders and every which way. I mean, you can't absorb it fast enough. It's just overwhelming. And as time goes by, the trust that grows between you and the Lord, the knowledge that you start to absorb about who he is, changes how you see him, changes how you talk to him. It changes how you trust him. It changes how honest you are with him. It changes how vulnerable you make yourself with him. Now, I understand the Lord sees all, knows all, but, you know, it's a two-way street. That's what he wants from us. He wants you to confess your sins. He wants you to trust him. He wants you to ask him for your needs. Ask and you'll receive. I mean, well, the Lord knows what we need. Well, he wants to hear you. Why? He wants to know that you trust him. He wants to see that you know that you can trust him. Because he's trustworthy. Because you know him. And that's what we need to have with each other. There's two different kinds of people here that he's talking about that we ought to be this way with. Them which labor among you, and them that are over you in the Lord and admonish you. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. We all know churches that they got a real good bond, or so they feel, between each other out there. But every year or two, they run the pastor off and find someone else. Because they don't take the time to get to know him and his family, what's going on, where his heart's at. It's all about them. You know, there's no trust. The whole concept or the whole idea that the way they approach this whole matter is totally on another page completely. You know, we've got to trust each other, but we also ought to know the people who admonish us, who over us in the Lord. You got to put time and effort into it. I know people, I've seen it before, where they have a relationship with their pastor like he's their hunting buddy. Now, I'm not saying you can't go hunting with your pastor if he likes to hunt or whatever. But lucky for y'all, he don't, so just saying. But hey, the station that God's put him in requires a certain amount of respect. And there's things that we ought to be more focused on about as far as knowing him in that aspect. We can't accomplish what verse 13 says. It says, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. We can't do that if we don't do what verse 12 says about knowing them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you. If you'll do that, if we'll do that with each other, then we'll be able to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and we'll be at peace among ourselves. That goes for our church. That goes for you at your job. Believe it or not, it'll work on a job too. Even in a secular setting with a bunch of knotheads at a sawmill or a feed store or a grocery store or whatever, car dealership, whatever, it'll work. And then peace can come along. You know, you got to know each other. We ought to put forth the effort that's required to know each other. Amen.